Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open this meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So for the next 2 weeks, we're going to be talking about step 12. So tonight is the first half of step 12. We always like to say, if you're new, welcome. We're not here to teach you anything. We're just here to share our experience, strength, and hope as it was freely given to us. And Buster and Bo have been kind enough to come and share with us this evening, so we'll welcome them. And I'm going to just read a paragraph. I'm going to start on page 89. And step 12 says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. The first paragraph we're going to start off with tonight is on page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing so much will ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Bo?
First of all, I'd like to say I'm damn drunk. My name's Bo.
Hey Bo.
I think the best example I can give of the first part of step 12 is by telling you about whenever I first came into the program. And in this area, I had been in the program in different places and attempted sobriety. And whenever I first got here, I met a young, well, he wasn't really that young a man, but a man named Pat Wallace. And Pat started a lot of groups in the Norfolk area. And the reason he would start one was he'd go out and get drunk and be ashamed to go back to the one he was going to, so he'd go find another one or start another one. But the thing that impressed me was Pat would give of everything he had. He helped me get an apartment, and then he went down to his apartment and gave me one of everything he had so that I'd be able to start mine. There was another old gentleman that used to come to the Easy Does It Club. He's going to the big book meeting in the sky, but we call him Manhattan Pat. And the first time I walked into the Easy Does It Club, Manhattan Pat took me to the coffee pot, gave me a coffee cup, said, fill it half full and hold it with both hands because I don't want you screwing up my floor. And anytime I talk about step 12, I have to talk about the ones that came before me. And there's a lot of them in this area that just impressed the heck out of me whenever I first met them. And one other I'll speak of, and a lot of you know who I'm talking about. Gladys would always finish whenever she was talking on anything. She would finish with, hang around and let us love you, take and love yourself. And those that came before me loved me. And I love myself today. Thank you.
Thanks.
Buster.
Thank you. My name is Buster Hawkins, and I'm an alcoholic, and I need to reaffirm every day certain things. And I had my last drink April 19th, 1992, sitting on a toilet in the bathroom of my mother's house. All the Smirnoff was gone, all the Miller High Life was gone, all the Wild Irish Rose was gone. All I had was what was left of a bottle of NyQuil. And that had over 20% alcohol in it. And I drank what was left of that because I wanted that alcohol and that NyQuil to do for me what all the alcohol had done for me in the past, and that's to make me think different, feel different about me, feel different about the world, make me think different, see the world different and see me different. And that's because I'm selfish and I'm self-centered. And how I feel and what goes on with me is the most important thing in the world. I'm a selfish, self-centered alcoholic, you know. And I'm like Bo, I have to think about the people that came before me. You know, I'm amazed every day at the power of this program. I can come in here in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's an island of sanity in the world gone mad. My sponsor used to tell me, and I love Tom. And if I use somebody's last name, that's because they did. And Tom Hearn was my first sponsor, and I love Tom. And Tom got me involved in Alcoholics Anonymous because he was a give-it-back person, you know. And Tom helped me. I had a lot of people to try to help me. Had wives that became ex-wives trying to help me. I had preachers, I'm serious, and I had preachers that come and sit with me and spend a lot of time trying to help me. And I really appreciate what they did. I had judges and lawyers. I had doctors that tried to help me. I had one doctor that was a psychiatrist, and he worked with me for over 10 years trying to help me not drink. He was a wonderful doctor, and he did a lot for me, but he wasn't an alcoholic. And when I talked, he didn't understand what I felt and what was going on with me. And he could give me medicine, but he couldn't give me the steps. And that's what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous, understanding people who knew what I was feeling and what was going on with me. And I'll never forget the last time I talked to the doctor, and I'm not going to call his name, but last time in the hospital, he visited me, and I'm laying up in the bed. And like I said, he tried to do an awful lot for me. And he said, I was talking to him, and I said, Doc, why can't I get sober? Why can't I stay sober? He shook his head, and I'll never forget the words. I laugh at them now, but when I was in that room, they weren't funny. He said, Buster, you have not been my greatest therapeutic triumph. You know, and I had an aunt, bless her heart, Aunt Byrne. She tried to, she, the first time I went to the hospital, and she told me, Buster, you've got more willpower than that. And every time I hear anybody talk about willpower, I think back what Tom said. He said, Buster, try to use willpower on diarrhea and see if it works. It will not work with your alcoholism. You know, and I love Tom. And Tom, and like I said, Tom, you know, Tom helped me tremendously. He truly did. And I'm a firm believer in sponsorship. Tom had a sponsor. And the way it's been related to me, if y'all know different, please let me know. But Tom died with over 27 years of sobriety, and I love Tom. Day he was buried, I had another sponsor because that's what he wanted me to do, and not to be in this thing by myself. I cannot do it by myself. It's one alcoholic talking to another. You know, it's been called the greatest phenomenon of the 20th century of ideas, and that is one alcoholic talking to another. And this book was recently named by the Library of Congress as one of 88 that has shaped America. You know, I'm grateful to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know what this thing has done for me. And I know what it's done for those that I've tried to help and that come into the program and get honest and willing to do something about their life. But Tom died with over 27 years of sobriety. And Tom's sponsor was a guy by the name of Earl Felton. And Earl died with over 50 years of sobriety. And Earl's sponsor was a guy named Sumner Pugh. And Sumner was very active in Alcoholics Anonymous in this area and helped, matter of fact, get some meetings, I think, started up in the Norfolk area. And his family had sent him to Towns Hospital where Bill got sober. And when he came back, Bill Wilson, our co-founder, was his sponsor. So it goes one alcoholic, goes all the way back, and all of us can trace our sponsors back to that point. And I say all this to say this right here now, and that is one alcoholic talking to another. And what a privilege that is. One of the first miracles that happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous, other than the doctor's opinion and understanding that I was sick and not a bad guy, you know. Because I came in here, I felt low on whale manure because I had done these things and I didn't want to do them. I drank against my will. I did things against my will. And I knew I was sick. I didn't know what the deal was. And I come in here, and when I studied that doctor's opinion, I understood that I'm a sick person, you know. And I try to relate that to the people I try to help. We're sick. We're not necessarily bad. We might do some bad things, you know. But the other miracle that happened to me, I think about it right now. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous hopeless, desperate. And when I walked through the room, somebody stuck their hand out to me and said, welcome, and shared with me and helped me to find the hope that's in these rooms. I was in my home group. I had the privilege to open up for 2.5 years. It didn't do much for the spirit of rotation, but it did an awful lot. It did an awful lot for me because I had lost my driver's license and I could walk from where I was working to the place we have our meeting, and I could open up. And I'm sitting there one Friday night, and a guy comes through the door, and I look at him. I say, yeah, I see the anxiety, I see the fear, I see he didn't have a clue. He was hopeless like I was. And I had the privilege to go up and shake his hand, take him to the coffee pot, get him some coffee, and he was shaking like I shook. And get him a meeting list and show him the meetings in the Suffolk area that he might want to attend. And I suggest, because a lot of good sobriety in those meetings. And I felt something, and I didn't know what it was. Monday night, maybe 1 or 2 weeks later, I was going to a big book study on Monday night at the Presbyterian Church in Suffolk, and I felt something. And we were studying, a certain part of the book, and something rang a bell with me. It dawned on me what I felt that night. What I felt was I was caring more about somebody else than me. And what a miracle for a self-centered alcoholic like this. Somebody took the time for me, and I had the privilege to take the time for him and to offer the hope that was offered me. And that's the deal. You know, that's the deal. I love working with newcomers, and I'm like Steve. Steve's a member of my home group. We're a member of the same home group, the Suffolk Friday Night Discussion group. We meet on Friday nights at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Suffolk. We do our best to carry the fifth tradition, and and we greet people when they come in there. We like for them to come in there. It's an open discussion. We get people from the courts. We get people from off the street. We get people who know what they are and are looking for a solution. We get people who don't have a clue, and that to me is a challenge, because you get somebody to come in and sit down and listen, and you see them start shaking their head. Yeah, I'm one of you. I'm in the right place, and it's a privilege, and it's a joy, and thank you.
All right, we're going to continue on page 91, and Bill starts to get pretty specific about instructions on working with others. On page 91, see your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak for himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up until the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment how that was accomplished. If he's in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him some humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. Bo?
When we work with other people, and my sponsor pounded it into my head that the only thing I could do to help someone else was let him know what happened to me and how it happened. And I remember one time it was a St. Patrick's Day, and I had a little bit of sobriety, and I really didn't have any plans of doing anything to help somebody else that day. And I'm driving down the street, and I remembered this old man that I drank with for years. And he always hung out in this one bar. And I just drove up in front of the bar, got out, and walked in. And he was sitting there. And he says, "God, boy, I haven't seen you in forever. Where have you been?" I said, "I quit drinking." He said, "How did you do it?" And I sat down, and we talked. And I offered to take him to a meeting that night. Took him to a meeting that night. And he became a very beneficial member of AA. And I look back on it, you know, and normally whenever I go out to try to help somebody, it's on the idea that I'm going to get something out of it or I wouldn't be doing it. And with him, I had no idea what was going on. It just transpired. And he's gone now, but he was very beneficial in the AA groups in the area here. I don't think that I could stay sober were it not for instance like incidences like that. I got my tongue in front of my eye teeth, couldn't see what I was saying. But the love and understanding that I get back every time I do a little bit of 12-step work is just amazing to me. Like Buster, I don't hesitate at all when anyone asks me for any help whenever it comes to this program. And outside this program, too, that's something that I've learned over the years, that it doesn't all pertain to just AA. It pertains to life. Most of you know I've moved back to Texas. And when I first got back there, my little hometown, they had a meeting list that David had pulled up for me. And I tried to find that meeting. And the meeting list said that it was in the community center, or the senior center. Yeah, said it was in the senior center. So it was Monday night meeting at 8 o'clock. I'd go down there at 7 o'clock. Nobody showed. I'd wait. Nobody showed. 8:30, I finally went home. 3 weeks in a row, I did this. I went to Kermit, which is about 25 miles north of me, on a Sunday. And I was making meetings in Odessa and Pecos and all these other little towns, but I couldn't find this meeting in my hometown. And finally, I went to Kermit and talked to the chairperson. I said, "Where in the hell is the meeting in Monahans?" And it was at the community center instead of the senior center. And that's now my home group. And I have a new sponsor that I've picked out there who has 42 years sober. And he always finishes whatever he's talking about with, "In God, don't let me get big-headed." And I'm starting to use that myself, so I'll pass it on to Buster.
Thank you, Bo. I couldn't tell you from Texas, you know. Some people you can tell by their accent where they're from. You know, like Graham, you know he's from North Carolina.
Right.
You know, I...
And here I thought he was from Germany.
Love you, Graham. Where are you? you know, in talking with someone who's new, or someone who thinks they've got a problem, or not sure they got a problem, or someone downright know, you know, when it comes stumbling in the door, they know they got a problem. I try to share with them what it was like for me. See, I never wanted to be an alcoholic. You know, I saw my daddy drink. And my daddy was a good man, but when he drank, he was different. And I swore I was never going to be like daddy. And I made a decision early on in life that I just won't go and drink. And I left home, went to East Carolina. I was a little bit larger then, and I was going to play football and get an education in that order. And I got hurt, and I couldn't play no more football. The doctor said, you know, you stand a chance of being permanently paralyzed, and we don't want that responsibility. So I couldn't play no more. They moved me out of the athletic dorm, put me in the freshman dorm. I got up with a group of guys, and we studied together. And one Friday night, they said, Buster, come on, go with us. We're going to the Rathskeller. And I share this. I share all this with the person, because I didn't want to be an alcoholic. And I told them I don't drink. And he said, well, Buster, 3.2 beer won't hurt you. And I had a friend from Asheville who said, Buster, after 16, it doesn't matter. You do get drunk and you go to the bathroom a lot. And I did. And anyhow, I went down with them, and they ordered a draft beer, and I drank it. Then they ordered a pitcher, and I drank some more. And I liked the way it tasted, you know. And all of a sudden, about an hour and 20 minutes into our stay there, I realized just how smart these guys were. I had not realized it until about an hour and 20 minutes into that conversation and after those few beers. And I didn't realize that they were as funny as they were. And I laughed at all their jokes. And I looked around about an hour and 40 minutes, and I swore they put a guard on the door and kept all the ugly women out. Because every woman in there was pretty, and what I'm trying to say is the magic was happening, and I made another decision that somewhere in that time frame that maybe not everybody drank like Daddy, and that thought haunted me all the way. I can't tell you the number of times I've gone to the hospital. And I share this with the individual because it was a slow progressive disease. You know, I can't tell you the number of times I went to the hospital. I can't tell you the number of times I detoxed. I can put numbers to certain things, and I share this with the guy because I drank against my will. I did not want to do these things. I didn't want to harm people. I didn't want to get 3 DUIs and 2 in less than 24 hours and driving a car into a 7-Eleven window. I did not want to do that, you know. And I didn't want to lose the 3 jobs that I'd lost. You know, I didn't want to lose my driver's license for 10 years. Certain things I'm putting numbers to. And I share this to impress upon someone who's new, who doesn't have a clue, that it's a progressive type thing. And I drank against my will. I did not want to drink and do some of the things that I did. But when I took one drink, my body wouldn't let it go, and I had to have it. And, you know, the first time I went to the hospital, I shared with them that I had drank myself to the point where, I could hardly walk. My skin had turned orange. I'm sitting in my apartment at over there on Broad Street in Suffolk. And I had, I was drinking over a half a gallon of vodka a day. And I could hardly walk, and I was dropping glass on the floor, and I'd go from the living room to the kitchen trying to get another drink, because if I didn't drink, I was going to die. I just knew I was going to die. And I get back to that sofa, and I get another drink in me, and I could stay alive for 20, 30 minutes to an hour. And again, impressing in front of the new person how progressive this is, and regardless of how much I did want to drink, that's where I got into. Knock on the door, and there's a friend of mine that I work with a police officer. They put me in a car, and they take me off to the hospital. And I stay in that hospital for 28 days, and they put me in that little room. that doesn't have a handle on the inside. And I advance around in that naked, they tell me, and I almost strangle myself with that little thing to put around you if you try to tie it in the back. And anyhow, I get it all wrapped around my neck and almost strangled and went through the DTs. My mother came to see me, and I pleaded with her to bring me something to drink because I had to have something to drink. But I thought I'd die if I didn't. And she wouldn't, and I hit her, and I fell out in front of her with an alcoholic seizure. And I love my mother. And after that 28 days, the doctor set me down on the side of the bed, and he said, Buster, you've been a very sick person. And if you drink again, you're going to die. And I told him, I said, Doc, don't you worry about it. I'll never drink again. I meant it with every fiber of my body, I would never drink again. And 3 months later, I was as drunk as I'd ever been in my life. And I share that with, and this is over a period of time, it's not right away, but I share all this with this the individuals I try to help, that regardless of how much, you know, that alcohol had done to me, the fear of dying from it didn't get me sober. The fear of, you know, of getting drunk again and doing something crazy didn't keep me. Fear didn't do anything. I had to come to Alcoholics Anonymous desperate, that pain and utter desperation that Bill talks about. And be willing, you know, be willing to do what was done in here and in these rooms. And that's the only thing that worked for me. Fear didn't do it. Willpower didn't do it. You know, and I try to impress upon the progressive nature of the disease. And thank you.
Thanks, Buster. My first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was in 1983. I didn't get sober that year, but I've been around for a little while, and I've been waiting to meet another person who drove through a 7-Eleven window. I'm in.
My sponsor said it was the first brew through in Virginia.
First brew through.
I might belong here. So Bill continues. We got the new man, and we're sharing with him, and we're going to continue on page 91. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as it was done in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is an alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you're satisfied that he's a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him, from your experience, how the queer mental condition surrounding the first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him he possibly can, if he's not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. No?
It's
kind of interesting that where it says there, you know, don't refer to this book. And I had been around the program in and out for many years before I got sober. And I'd read the big book and could quote it and everything, but I couldn't stay sober. And when I drank my last drink, January 1st, 1987, I ended up in a little detox down at Cocoa Beach. And then when I got out of the detox, I came up here and went to St. Tim's and picked up my white chip, and they said the Lord's Prayer, and I had Woody Stanley standing on my left and Mike Matisse standing on my right. And Woody turned and gave me a hug, and he says, it's going to be all right. And I said, it will be if you'll be my sponsor. And then Mike said, have you got a place to stay, Bo? And I said, no. And he said, well, you can stay with me, but you're going to stay for 2 weeks only. And within that 2 weeks, I get up at 4:30, you're going to get up when I do. And we're going to work the first three steps on our knees. And whenever I get done with the first three steps, I'm going to work and you're going to go out and find you a job and a place to stay. And I had been around the program for so long that, you know, I had known all the little tricks and everything to keep from doing what we were supposed to do. But I didn't have the guts not to. So I had a job and a place to stay within 2 weeks. And I still do the first three steps on my knees. But it's amazing we can work with people at any level and still get something out of it. And we were talking before the meeting, David and Buster and I, and I can't not get something out of it. I can try not to get anything out of it. But I'm going to get something out of helping someone else. I always do. It just, anything that you do in this program to give of yourself comes back tenfold. My mother used to tell me that, you got to give it away, and it'll come back tenfold. And I thought, how stupid can that be? You know? And for years, if it was out there, there was an old Burt Reynolds movie that Jerry Reed was trying to tell Burt Reynolds what to do in this one situation. He said, you got to reach out and grab and lock onto it and hold it and keep it. And that's the only way you're going to get anywhere in this world. And I believed that for years. And I took for years and years and years. And I came in here and Woody said, you don't have to take anymore. You can give. And, you know, I love Woody to death, and I see him on occasion, and he's still giving just as much as he was the day he came in here. And I try to do just exactly like him, because that's what he taught me. I don't know any better anymore. And I'm not going to give of myself without getting something back, no matter how hard I try, because God's going to take care of it, both he and I. It's up to you, Buster.
Thank you, Bo. You know, he keeps referring to his sponsor, and I keep referring to mine. I love Tom, and I just happen to turn. This is one of my most prized possessions, because he left me all his AA stuff when he passed away. And this was given to him at Jackson Mill, West Virginia, Roundup, when he spoke, and he wrote in here, Buster, may you have long-term sobriety one day at a time by the grace of God and by being a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he gave this to me in 1995. And Tom was a give-it-back person, and I tried to get in his back pocket. I used to ride to meetings. I didn't have a driver's license, and I rode with Tom to meetings, and a lot of times Hilda would be in the front seat and I'd be in the back seat, and I hear them AA Al-Anon clearing the air conversations. And it was really a great experience for me, because I saw how families that got sick together got well together, and it was just a wonderful experience for me. But Tom was a give it back person. He impressed upon me too, Buster, if this thing helps save your life, you need to be able to give it back and to understand it. Not only work the steps that got me into traditions, to understand too that Alcoholics Anonymous works not only because of what Dr. Bob and Bill put in this thing, but what they left out, and that we have a singleness of purpose. And he impressed upon me that, and that to give it back was a privilege. And, one of the first things he did for me was to give me a tape. And he said, I want you to listen to this. And it was a guy by the name of Jimmy Smith from Lincoln in Georgia. Jimmy's dead now. And he was a very successful football coach in Georgia and lost everything. Spent a lot of time in institutions and jails. But I got something out of that tape that he wanted me to get out of that tape, and I share it with everybody I try to sponsor and try to help. Jimmy said, we tell ourselves two lies, and the first lie is, I'm only going to drink one, and the second lie is, ain't going to be as bad this time. And that sticks with me, and I try to impress upon the guys that I try to help that this is what we tell ourselves. We lie to ourselves, and I had to get to that point of desperation where I knew that I could not safely drink alcohol anymore. And I have some who did like I, and some are still doing it, trying to get sober drinking, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. I try to impress upon them too that until you're willing and able to, you may have to get you know, physically detoxed to get to that point. But if you have to, you have to. But whatever it takes to get sober, to stay sober. And I enjoy talking to people that are new to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my sponsor used to laugh at me, and I used to wonder what he was laughing at. And I called him one time, and he hung up on me. I called him back, and I was sharing with him something going on in my life, and he called me a con artist, and I hung up on him. And I called him back. I said, and he was laughing when he picked up the phone, which made it worse. I said, you know what you called me? He said, yeah, I called you a con artist. I said, well, why did you do that? He said, Buster, I never met an alcoholic who won't one. And he also told me, Buster, you know what an alcoholic is lying? And I said, no. He said, when his lips are moving. And, you know, and so when I talk to guys that try to help, honesty is the big thing that Tom pointed out to me, that I had to be honest with myself first. To thine own self be true, because I don't lie to anybody else until I lie to myself first. And I'm grateful for that kind of direction. And, you know, I see why he laughed at me, because I didn't think it was funny at the time, but he laughed at me, and then he'd share with me that what I just said helped him stay sober. And I understand that today. You know, because I was talking to a guy not too long ago, and we were talking about fear. A guy that he wanted me to sponsor him, and we went through with some of the things that we've been discussing here tonight. Lay out what happened to you, what happened, and where you found a solution, and, you know, what it's like today. And we were talking about fear. I said, Brian, I found out in doing my fourth and fifth step that I worried a lot. And I didn't think, you know, I didn't equate that with fear. I thought fear was being scared or something, you know. And he said, well, he knew all about fear. I said, you do? He said, yeah, I've been shot, I've been stabbed, and I've been married. And I started laughing. I couldn't stop. You know, but so there's a certain amount, and he didn't know what I was laughing at. You know, he was serious. He was serious. And I couldn't help it, but it was funny, and those kind of things happen often. And I was talking to a guy, and I really, really love this guy. He's no longer with us. He died. And Dirk and I drank alike. But when he had it, he drank until it was all gone. And Dirk had lost his driver's license, and he had a bicycle. And he was very honest about this. He said, you know, in order to balance the bicycle, he'd go to the liquor store, and he'd buy 2 half-gallons so that he put one on one handlebar and one on the other handlebar. And that's how he got home. And he had some very tragic things to happen in his life because of drinking. He woke up and felt his girlfriend next to him, and she was dead. And big police investigation, a whole 9 yards. A lot of tragic stuff. But Derek got sober. But we used to talk about how we drank. And I was sharing with him the stuff about the hospital and taping bottles to my legs and all this kind of stuff. But and he said, Buster, I tell you, he said, my drinking was like making love to a skunk. And y'all please forgive me. I said, what do you mean making love to a skunk? He said, I didn't get all I wanted, but I got all I could stand. And the crazy, y'all please forgive me, but the crazy thing about that is I understood what he was talking about. I understood what he was talking about. And, you know, because when I drank, I wanted to drink it all. And I would actually, and I share with him this, people with this too, I was the alcoholic mind. I'd get up in the middle of the night, go to the trash can in my underwear, and because I had all these half-gallon bottles, and if I died during the night, I didn't want anybody to know how much I drank. And that's crazy. Then that's crazy alcoholic thinking. But that's what I did, and I thought I was very serious about it. And I'd go out to the trash can in my underwear and drop them in there and go back into the... And I'd have my half gallon, so the next, if they came, I only had one. If I died, I only had one. And crazy thinking, you know, crazy, crazy. And, some of the things I did was just, you know, and the bad thing about it, too, is my family, God bless them, they love me. And My daddy used to tell me when I went to him, and I share this, I said, my daddy drank, and my daddy drank hard, and he was a different man when he drank. And I go to him and I talk to him. And I said, Daddy, don't you see what you're doing? And he said, y'all leave me alone. I'm hurting nobody but myself. And my mama, my daddy, my wife, my stepchildren, when they come to me, my stepson, he's now a chief of police up in Northern Virginia. He followed me to the bathroom. I'd come home because I had to shake so bad. And I came home, I took my clothes off, set my underwear, and I grabbed my briefcase and I went into the bathroom. Now, nobody, you know, who wants to go in? You go into the bathroom with a briefcase. And what I had 2 pints of vodka in there, and he followed me in there. He said, don't you know what you're doing to Mom, to John, and to me? And I told him those most selfish words that ever come out of my mouth. Y'all leave me alone. I'm hurting nobody but myself. And see, what a terrible place to put people. Y'all leave me alone, leave me alone. And in the back of my mind, please love me. Leave me alone, but please love me. And terrible place to put people. Terrible place to put people. And I'd promise, and I'd promise, and then I'd come through the door, stumble across the coffee table, fall over onto the sofa. They look at me and have that look in their eyes. Oh, no, he's done it again. He's done it again. I get up and make them mumbling apologies one more time. I'm not going to do it anymore. You know. And then I go drink against my will again because I didn't want to drink. I didn't want those kind of things to happen. But and I try to share that, just how cunning, baffling, and powerful the disease is. And how the mental twist, the mental obsession with alcohol is well tied in with the physical allergy to alcohol. Another miracle was the doctor's opinion, like I said, because it helped me understand that. You know, I didn't break out in a rash. I didn't cough and sneeze or anything like that. The allergy for me was when I drank one, I felt it, you know, and I had to have more. Thank you.
Thank you, Buster. We're going to keep going on page 94. Outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you're now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you're helping him. Make it plain that he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. He should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more helpless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. Well,
now we're getting to the meat of the thing. I can't talk about step 12 without reverting back to the other 11. And when I'm working with a newcomer, I have to let him know exactly where I'm coming from and where I've been, or I don't have a chance in hell of getting his attention. And I can't do that unless I've done those other 11 steps. And it's talking about here, you know, I can't remember the exact words because I'm not that good at it. And by the way, if I'm shaking a little bit, it's not because I'm nervous. Because I'm cold. I've been living in 110, 118 degree weather, and you come out here and you guys are trying to freeze me out. But let's see if I can find it. Outline a program of action explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. You know, if I don't do those other 11 steps, and I believe firmly that whenever I asked Woody to be my sponsor, I was asking for help, and he was there to give it. And whenever I have a newcomer come up to me and ask for help, I feel that I have to be as helpful as I can be. And Woody always told me, you know, you're not their banker, you're not their marriage counselor, you're not their lawyer, but you've got something to give them, and that's the steps. And that's all you can give. You know, I thought at one time that I even went so far as to went out and bought a Volkswagen, or a Volkswagen, a station wagon, so that I could carry more people to meetings. You know, this is the kind of stupid stuff we pull whenever we first come in here. And then we get a good sponsor that tells us, no, you don't have to do those things. All you have to do is give a little love, a little understanding and caring. And, you know, it's real easy for me to forget what was given to me until I get in here and sit down with another alcoholic. And a lot of it comes back real quick because I remember some of the things that I went through. You know, I'm gonna slide a little one in here on you that may not go along with the topic, but it's gonna go along with this, with the program. This rather ancient barfly was sitting at the bar, and several guys were hanging around and trying to ignore her. And she held up her hand. She says, if anyone in here can guess what I have in my hand, I'll give them the best sex they ever had. And they all turned away, you know. And this old drunk in the back says, it's an elephant. She says, close enough. And I try to throw some of that levity in whenever I am working with a newcomer. Because it's not all serious. Sometimes we have to have a little fun. And I just came back from the Wakefield Campfire Conference, and I had a blast. And if you didn't go and you haven't been, go next year. I start talking about it as soon as I get out of it to let people know. And we had a lot of fun, didn't we?
We did.
We sure did. Go ahead, Buster.
Thank you, Bo. And Bo's right. It's an awful lot of fun. We're not a glum lot. The book says that. And I tell you, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I just misery and the glum, you know, what are we going to do? And Tom and Hilda, God bless them, they would have parties over the house, chili parties, Super Bowl parties, Christmas parties. I'll never forget the first one I went to. It was a Christmas party. And I'm going to get to this in just a second, but he just reminded me of this. And we were in there, and I found myself laughing. Now, I don't know if you know Jack O, who recently passed away, and then the Right Reverend Ronnie, we call him. They were discussing all the business ventures they had. They used to sell seafood. And they were talking about how this lady had really fussed them out because she had asked for a dozen crabs and came back and complained because she only got 13. And I say that because what I want to emphasize is I laughed, and it won't alcohol induced. I laughed, and I was laughing so hard my stomach hurt, and we were having a good time, and there was a lot of that that went on then with Frank and Tom and Hilda and Frank and Shirley, and it just a lot of fun. But, you know, like Bo was talking about, outlined the program of action. Tom came, when I asked Tom to be my sponsor, he said some things to me. He said, he asked me the prerequisites, you know, to work in the steps. Are you willing to go to any length to get sober and stay sober? And I said, yes, had no idea what I was saying yes to. And
None of us did, or we wouldn't have done it.
And he said, well, look, this is it. He said, I'm not going to run you down. Time's precious. Time's precious. I'm not going to run you down. I want you to be at 4 meetings a week, 2 where I am, so I'm looking in the eyes. And one of them has to be a big book study. And I say those kind of things to guys I sponsor today. I think book studies are extremely important. to learning about the program of recovery, learning about alcoholism, learning about Alcoholics Anonymous, and how to live life and be reasonably happy without alcohol. And I just think it's and the other big deal is to be able to give it back to somebody else, and how important that is. And we got involved with the steps, and we worked the steps together. And I'll never forget doing my fifth step with him down at Virginia Beach one afternoon at the Oceanfront Conference. Went to his room. Tom smoked Pall Mall cigarettes. Steve knows what I'm talking about. He talked with one hand and put the cigarette behind him, you know, and it, then it'd take a puff, and then he'd go to the sliding glass doors and blow the smoke out. Come back in. Buster, you've been an SOB before. You don't need to be one now. And we did the fifth step, and I learned something about me, you know. What had blocked me off from, as the book says, the sunlight of the spirit, what had made me be in the way all the time and kept me, from being a useful member of society and a friend among friends and a active family member. We did that, and things started happening, and I was able to go and make right the things that I had done with people. No more mumbling apologies. You know, when I did the fourth and fifth step, at 6 and 7, asking God to help me with these things, with the idea that I put shoes on my prayers. If I asked God to, give me a little more faith. Then I need to walk with around with a little more courage and with the understanding I need to do the right thing. If I wanted to be less angry, then I got to walk my day and be a little more patient and tolerant and giving and put shoes on my prayers and able to make amends to the people. One fantastic thing happened to me this past this past summer. Hadn't been with my first wife in 40 years, and we talked twice, once when her mother died and once when my mother died, and she called me, and we were talking about family members, and I wanted to make my amends to her for quite some time, and Tom was still alive when I first was going to do this, and I went to him. I said, Tom, I need to make my amends to my first wife. He said, okay, and we started talking about it. I said, well, she's with her fourth husband now. He said, what? I said, she's with her fourth husband. He said, let me think about this for a while. And he died thinking about it. So after 40 years, the miracle of this program and how things come about in God's time, not my time or his time or anybody else's time, but we were talking on the phone, and she was asking questions about family and wanted me to know a little bit about her family. And I'd already talked it over with Frank, my sponsor, and I needed to make this amend. I was getting ready to ask her to meet to make the amend, and she said, I would like to talk to you sometime. Can we meet over at Ruby Tuesdays? And I said, sure. So we made arrangements to meet for lunch, Ruby Tuesday, not lunch, we just gonna have, she's gonna have iced tea and I had a Diet Pepsi. And we sat and talked for a few minutes, and when we started talking, she grabbed my hands and said, I want you to forgive me. And I said, what? She said, I want you to forgive me. And I said, Chrissy, I've done that a long time ago. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here to tell you that I really regret what I had done, you know. And she says, no, I need to hear it come out of your mouth. And so I said, yes, I forgive you, and I want you to understand why I'm here. You know, I'm here to tell you that I regret what I put you through. And the time, and I cited some specific times, some things, and in God's time, not my time, I was able to make my amends. It was after 40 years. And I was able to make amends to, you know, I saved my stepson and got his training to be a policeman patting me down, because I always tape bottles to my legs. And I'd come out of the bathroom or come out of the house and go into the truck or to the car, and he would pat my legs to see if I had any bottles. Yeah. But I was able to make amends to those people, and I made a list of people I had harmed, and I'd check them off as I did. Of course, I talked to my sponsor with them, before I would do them. And I still have a list in my wallet, and I've had several wallets since I made that list. I got the same list, and I check them off. And there's some that in God's time, not my time, and the opportunity will present itself. I'm willing. It's just circumstances prevent it right now, but I'm willing to do that. But this is a program that has given me my life back, given me means to live and be reasonably happy, and to help someone else find it. And I share with them what Tom did for me and what a loving God. You know, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, that third step. You know, I was brought up in a Baptist church. I was vice president of a Presbyterian Youth Fellowship. I got married in a Catholic church. I went to the Episcopal church, got very resentful at the Episcopal church because they wouldn't let me and my second wife get married in a church because both of us had been divorced. So we went to the beach and got married on the beach. And I say all that is that I understand the God of the churches, and I understood that. But I'm a hard-headed alcoholic, and I had to get beaten to my knees by alcohol to reach out for something other than me, you know, that could help me. And I found that in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you'd asked me when I came here what spirituality was, I'd given a long definition, and it had a Southern Baptist tone to it, you know, a long definition. But today I think different, I feel different, and I act different, and a lot of people are grateful for that, and as well as myself. And I act different, and it's all a result of this program. And I share that with people, that their life can change. You know, you're not in bondage to alcohol anymore. I can still be in bondage to me. That's why I go to meetings like this. I need to hear what you people do and how you've done things so that I can stay out of bondage of self. And that helps. You know, another thing, too, my dear friend Wallace, who got sober in Meridian, Mississippi, and I hear that accent right now, he would talk about God consciousness. You know, I always believed in God. I just didn't pay him any mind. And also found out in Alcoholics Anonymous, I believed in God. And I found out, and it was sometime in Alcoholics Anonymous too, I found out that believing in God was not the same thing as relying on God. I was believing in God and relying on me, and that's not a good combination. You know? And y'all helped me find that out through the steps and hearing you share your experience, strength, and hope, and how you went through some very difficult things, not drinking, and being reasonably happy. And, you know, I love this program. You know, I really do. And that line down there, I got it underlined, the more hopeless he feels, the better. And I've been privileged to go into the Western Tidewater Regional Jail on Monday nights. And been, as a matter of fact, that's where I'd be now if I won't hear. And there was a guy that used to go into the jail meeting with us, and when the inmates would come in and we'd get ready to close the meeting after we'd had a meeting, and you hear a lot of jailhouse chatter and all this and promises and what they're going to do when they get out, and we try to impress upon them nothing changes if nothing changes, and a year or two later we see them back in again. But Steve used to tell them, Steve S. from Smithfield used to tell them, said, I pray desperation for you. And I understand that, because desperation, the more hopeless that I got, and that pain and utter desperation that Bill borrowed from William James, you know, I understand that, because that's what drove me to become willing. You know, I got desperate. And thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian. So much. That quick. You got 30 seconds.
Okay. I was out at Wakefield and having a good time and everything. My phone rang Sunday morning, and it was my son, who has now 9 months in this program and 42 years old. And he said, Dad, I was studying my Catholicism for church this morning, and I found something that I feel I wanted to share with you. And he says, and he starts reading, and it says, go forth and give up your worldly goods and go out and do my bidding. And he says, that's what you did when you went to Texas, wasn't it? And to have my son tell me something like that is something that's, when I left him, he was 10 years old. And he loves me today, and that's because of this program and what I've done here. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Bo. Thank you both so much. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. There's a 45th anniversary celebration of the Suffolk Discussion Group on Friday, October 11th, 2003. I have flyers up here. Saturday morning brunch bunch on Saturday, October 5th. Probably going to be some eating and stuff happening there. And we got flyers on the table. Our group, Simple Actions Group, is doing the Bob Darrell thing on October 25th. 7 p.m. open speaker at Kent United Methodist Church, and workshops all day Saturday, October 26th. That is free, open to all. Bring a dish if you wish for the potluck lunch. Are there any other AA related announcements?
Don't drink, you won't get drunk.
Thanks, Bo.
I'm Michelle, entirely sober alcohol.
I'm Michelle.
Sunday night at 5:30, we have the Living Sober meeting at Wayland and Baby Boulevard. Last night was our first meeting at the United Bayview Church of Christ, and we had over 30 people there. Very excited to have that kind of turnout. And we'd like to remind all of you that 5:30 on Sunday evenings off Chesapeake Boulevard, Baby Boulevard, off Granby Street. Love to have you there. We have a lot of good things to share and refreshments, so hope to see everybody. Like to join us next Sunday night, 5:30.
Thank you,
Chef. Thank you. Any other announcements? Nice and loud. Any announcements? All right, the Simple Actions Group is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Thank you. And just so we can welcome you by first name, is there anybody in the room tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We just know your name? First 30 days.
Bill, alcoholic.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Bill. Welcome.
Bill.
Welcome.
Hey, Andrea. Hey. Welcome. All right. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor please raise your hand? All right. There's literature available over on that table. Over yonder, this is yonder, over that. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting at
Plaza del Sol.
Plaza del Sol, that Mexican place. It's on 22nd and Colonial, okay? And is anybody inspired to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Buster, would you do that for us, please?
Page 164.
Yes, sir.
Vision for you. Last paragraph. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past, give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank shall you. We close in the usual manner? Father,
our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.